at a place where you feel like you have colleagues that you can go to and that support you in your work, but maybe you work for a one-person office or you don't feel like you have as tight-knit connections in your place of employment, and so it's important to try to find other people in similar roles to lean on.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of World Strides Inaugural Podcast, Changing Lives Through Education Abroad, a weekly series of conversations with international education's most interesting thought leaders, as well as discussions on emerging trends, best practices, and innovation happening in our field. I'm your host, Zach McInnes, and I'm so excited about this week's episode. Today, we'll be talking about the roadmap to early career success in international education and what practitioners at all levels should know about supporting colleagues in our field who are in their first 5 years of their international education journey. I can't imagine a better guest to regale us with her pro tips for early career success than my dear friend, Grace Twardy. Grace is the Senior Manager of University Relations and Program Development at Boston University. Grace does it all. I've known Grace since she started in education abroad back in 2016, and I have watched in awe at all that she has accomplished since then. I like to think of Grace as the embodiment of everything that I love about this field: her passion, her dedication, her innovative spirit, and yes, her sense of fun. They always leave me inspired. Perhaps more than anything else, though, I am beyond amazed at how Grace has evolved into a true force to be reckoned with in our field. Seriously, though, sometimes Grace makes you feel lazy. I can't wait to pick Grace's brain about her story and her tips and tricks for finding success in the earlier years of an education abroad career. Grace Twardy, welcome to the podcast.
Zach, thank you so much for having me. That was quite an introduction, and I'm so honored and happy to be here chatting with you today.
Thrilled to have you, and thank you. To kick us off, I'd like to ask you to please give a brief overview of how you got your start in international education and how that led to your current role at Boston University.
It's funny, when looking back, I know so many others that now work in the field, I didn't really know that working in education abroad was a thing, but I was very happy to have such supportive colleagues and supervisors at the time. I guess technically, my first start was when I was an undergraduate student at Providence College. I have to give my little obligatory Go Friars on there. And I was a student worker at the study abroad office during my senior year at the time, after having coming back from study abroad myself. And when graduating, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I hadn't applied for many jobs, but my supervisor at the time really nudged me and encouraged me to actually apply for a job at the study abroad organization that I studied abroad with, CIEE. My first role out of college was luckily enough in this field. And so I was a campus coordinator for CIEE. I really like to think of it as my crash course into this field. I really helped support the institutional relations team going around to different campuses and in New England. And I was able to make so many connections early on and learn about many different areas of the field. That really helped me kind of think about what I wanted to do and sort of the direction I wanted to go in. And ultimately, I did end up on the provider side for a little bit. After CIEE, I bounced to college here in Athens, CYA. And so it was really great to kind of see how two very different providers worked at the time. But I was really excited to get more direct student advising experience. That was something that was a goal of mine at the time. I really wanted to be doing more advising. And I was able to be sort of the sole main student advisor at CYA and really learn what it's like to help students apply for visas and get them through pre-departure. But I knew ultimately I really wanted to be on the other side of the field, as we like to say, sort of on the institution side, working on a university campus, really being directly with students. Goal of wanting to be part of the campus community and working more directly with students, and also honestly, wanting to pursue a master's degree at some point is what led me to BU. BU Study Abroad is a super unique organization where we're able to act as sort of a provider and an institution at the same time. After I did some advising there as a program manager, I now am doing the best of both worlds and doing the university relations at a university campus, which is great.
Thanks for sharing that, Grace. You and I have that in common, and I got my start in international education as a road warrior, as it were, for ISA. And then I spent some time working on a university campus where I was able to attain a master's degree. That's a common entry point for folks in our field. And I'd be curious to hear your observations on being an early career professional at a provider versus a university. What are your thoughts on that?
From my own personal experience, it seemed like it was an easier way into the field, honestly, starting off at a provider. A lot has changed in terms of expectations for roles at the university side now, especially post-pandemic. But definitely at the time when I was trying to break in, those typical study abroad advisor roles really needed a master's degree. That was a requirement for so many of these positions. At the time, it wasn't something that personally, as much as I wanted to do it, I could afford financially. And it was a little bit easier navigating those opportunities on the provider side, having had some of those connections already, being there and exploring those. It didn't seem like there were as many requirements, to be honest, not really sure why, but it seemed like it was a little bit easier to break in on the provider side. And I will say I'm happy I did, because again, it allowed me to make so many connections early on. And so it is something I would recommend, because you really get to be in the field working with a lot of different universities, getting to connect with a lot of different people. And definitely a lot of the connections I had made after that first job are ones that I still have today. As you mentioned, when I was traveling around for CIE, that's how our paths crossed.
It is indeed. I remember when you first came to my campus. Well, thanks for sharing that, Grace. And one thing that always impresses me about you is how you're, of course, working full time and you have a life outside of work, but you always find the time to serve our field and to hold leadership positions. And one thing that really in particular stands out to me about you is the way you kept our community together here in New England during the pandemic, when everything went virtual, when you were the Boston Area Study Abroad Association co-chair. Can you talk a little bit about BASA and what that experience was like for you?
That means a lot. My time with BASA is something I really cherish. I don't think I would have gotten through the pandemic without that community, honestly. So it's really an experience I'm so thankful for. I was so excited to be in that role as one of the co-chairs, because I had benefited so much from the programming that BASA did. And that's why I continue to stay motivated to try to get involved with these sort of opportunities, is I know the impact that those more affordable, accessible professional development opportunities had on me and my career and the connections that was able to facilitate. I wanted to be involved in helping to make those possibilities happen for other folks in the field. It was interesting, though, because obviously all the sort of opportunities I thought I was going to be able to do with BASA were not possible when 2020 hit and the world shut down. It honestly was one of the most challenging but creative and rewarding times to be in that role, because we saw how much of an impact we could still have and how strong the community is. People were so engaged with how we shifted to a lot of virtual offerings and opportunities during that time. We had even such a bigger reach. That was something that was really exciting to see too. We were continuing to do our monthly Zooms, or we even found ways to shift our conferences into a virtual format. It took a lot of creativity and planning, but it was nice to be able to provide that outlet and space for everyone. And it honestly really gave me a sense of purpose during that time when it didn't seem like much else was going on.
See, listeners, downright inspiring. Thank you for sharing that, Grace. What advice would you have to our listeners today about getting involved in regional networks like BASA, where they're located? Why is it important?
It's so important, Zach. It's funny, I didn't give a presentation on this on a related level with one of my BASA co-chairs, Emily Ossetson, last year, but that while there might be some of these more established, formal, local networks, that's not to say that you can't create something like this in your own area or whatever you're doing, that it's so important. Hopefully you're at a place where you feel like you have colleagues that you can go to and that support you in your work, but maybe you work for a one-person office or you don't feel like you have as tight-knit connections in your place of employment. And so it's important to try to find other people in similar roles to lean on and talk things through, get ideas, learn what they're doing. And honestly, that's so much about what our work is leaning on the people in our community. And thankfully, we're also collaborative and open to that. For those of you, if you aren't sure maybe what opportunities there are, a good starting point would be to ask someone on your team or your supervisor, are they aware of any networking opportunities, whether they're in person or virtual? You could also get involved with NAFSA at a regional level. I know this one individual from a Boston area based university because we would commiserate over the Spanish visa process. It really doesn't take much to try to reach out to someone. You'll be surprised you're not alone. If you're having similar things on your mind that you want to talk about, there's other people to talk about it with. And a good starting place is doing it virtually too. If that's something that could be an easier lift, create a Zoom room and see who shows up. You might be surprised.
Love to hear stories about the Spanish consulate bringing people together, as they're still good at doing. I would refer our listeners who want to dive into this topic a bit more to the episode of Changing Lives with Catherine Lamanna from Ramapo College in New Jersey. She is the co-chair of the New Jersey equivalent of the Boston Area Study Abroad Association. And she had a lot of insightful thoughts to say about that. I would love to hear your perspective on the importance of a regional NAFSA and why that might be a good place for early career professionals to invest some time.
The regional conferences are such a great starting point for people if you're new to the field and entering. NAFSA annual can seem really overwhelming. The regionals, again, are so valuable because you're getting to connect with people who are in your network, in your community. These are the people that are around you that you can continue to follow up with more easily. It's a lot more accessible in some ways. And I love the community feel at the regional conferences. You'll get to know other people who are at universities down the road, and you're able to really formulate those relationships. Also, a lot of the programming that happens at regional conferences too can be geared toward newcomers. There's usually specific sessions, and there's different opportunities that are happening at regional conferences, different sessions that are geared more toward maybe this point in someone's career. And so it's a really great opportunity. I would definitely advocate to go to a regional over a national conference if it's my first few years in the field, because you'll really get to make some of those long-lasting connections right away. And the great thing is I don't have the data so far from this year's bi-regional conference, but last year it was 51% newcomers that attended to the regional conference in Manchester. It's also a really great space to meet other people who are in a similar position to you. It's a really great opportunity, and hopefully one that's a little bit more accessible and easier to maybe advocate for, since they should be a little bit more cost effective.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Grace. Being young in our field can often mean being full of ideas, new energy, and zest, but it can also come with self-doubt. How can we combat imposter syndrome in our daily practices and overall work?
What a question. I'm not currently feeling a little bit of imposter syndrome being on your podcast thinking, what could you possibly think I have to say? No, but it's true. A lot of it is too, I can only speak for myself, but I know for a lot of people, the work is really personal. And with what we do, it's hard to not also let that be a reflection of ourselves and thinking about how it's very personally related to us. So it's hard to not take things personally and hard to not doubt ourselves. But for me, what I've been trying a lot to do is, maybe you don't think that a certain opportunity that's come your way is something that you deserve or that you should be approached for something, but trust the opportunity and the process. People might reach out to you because they think it'd be a good opportunity for you to get involved in. They might reach out to you because they think it's something that you would actually be really good at and have a good perspective. It might be hard and we might be doubting ourselves, but trust the people that are approaching you for this sort of stuff. It's hard to be confident sometimes, but at any rate, an opportunity is an opportunity. It can go great. Maybe it's a struggle and a challenge, but it's all a learning opportunity. And I think to be getting more involved and to be putting yourself out there, there's only good that can come of that. So trust the process and trust that you do have something to offer, even if you're trying to still maybe figure out what that is too.
Do you have any people in your life, Grace, who have served as a mentor to you or cheerleader? If so, I'd love for you to chat about the importance of mentor relationships for early career professionals.
I could think of several off the top of my head. And when I think about each step that I've had along my journey, there has been someone there specifically that had either directed me to that opportunity, encouraged me to do that opportunity. And I've been really lucky that I've had such supportive mentors in my life. And it's funny, I've been thinking a little bit more about that word too, mentor. Sometimes that might seem a little daunting to think of, oh, how do I approach someone to be a mentor? What exactly does that mean? I don't think they necessarily have to be a mentor either. Find the people who are really cheering you on, like you said, the cheerleader, and that will be there to advocate for you. There's been plenty of times either when maybe I was laid off or I needed to talk to someone about a certain opportunity where I've had people that thankfully I've worked with that have continued to stay in my life and be connected with and who have advocated for me in certain ways. I very much also think that's why it's important to be involved with your communities and to make those connections, because they are important. It's a mutually beneficial relationship as well, that as much as maybe you're having cheerleaders or mentors being there to support you, think of the ways that then you can support them and pay it forward as well.
I love how you articulated that. Yeah, thanks, Grace. How can we empower ourselves and one another to stand tall and be confident, even when we are in the early stages of our careers? In other words, how can we affirm ourselves and those around us?
Yeah, I'm thinking back a little bit too to the imposter syndrome question, and maybe also thinking of if you are in the early stage of your career, some people might think, oh, I'm new, what do I have to offer? think of what that actually means to be new. You're in such a great position to ask questions, reach out and connect with people. Everything is a learning opportunity at this point. And that's something where when you're trying to be a little bit more self-confident in yourself and connect with others and empower yourself, think about that and say, I have a lot to offer because I have a new perspective. I am going to ask questions. That's what would be something that's so great to do at this point is reach out, connect with people that you're interested in, their work or their roles and wanting to learn more about. It's all about asking those questions and being in that position and remembering also why you're here, why you're interested in the work. That goes a long way as well. We all are really passionate about what we do, and that's what drives us to continue to stay and do this work. Keep remembering your why and come back to what your goals are and the fact that you are in this great position to learn. It's a good opportunity to also then acknowledge what other people are doing so that you can then have those conversations about, oh, this sounds really cool. How could I one day get involved? Or, oh, I really am interested in the work that you're doing. If there are any other opportunities for me to shadow you or be involved in that meeting, please let me know. Asking those questions and showing an interest will only lead to more opportunities down the line because then people will think of you as someone who is really excited and passionate and wants to learn.
It goes a long way. I completely agree. Sometimes I like to think of providers like myself as serving as a sort of connective tissue for our field. And some of my favorite practitioners in this field have worked, as I like to say, on both sides of the desk at a provider like WorldStrides, but also at a university. And that includes you. How can early career professionals take advantage of provider relationships?
When I was on the provider side working with other people on my team, they were so knowledgeable of what's happening in our field. They sort of have to be. And I know that's something me now transitioning back into this line of work and not necessarily having a region, but they're a great resource for you. The providers are really there to help support you and the work that you're doing. And that includes you and yourself and getting involved. And I know, Zach, you're one who has always been great about sharing what local opportunities are happening, even if there's certain talks that are happening online too and promoting those opportunities. And I do think it's really great to see the people that you're working with, whether they're a provider or someone in your office too, as resources to sort of get engaged and also figure out what else is out there.
You know, Grace, in my notes here, I have you written down as a rising star, but really, the truth is you are a star that has already risen. And to that, what I would love for you to do is to sketch out a roadmap for our listeners about what early career success can look like in education abroad.
Well, that's really nice of you to say, Zach. It's funny. I'm laughing because it is funny to now think that I've been working in this field for a little over 5 years now and what that's looked like. It embodies a lot of characteristics and attributes that would be helpful to have as you're trying to find your way and your own roadmap in this field. I have been laid off. I've been furloughed. I know there are other people in this field, especially as a result of the pandemic, that have gone through similar things. And I had doubts at times, but I kept coming back to the fact that I loved this work. I loved the community, the learning opportunities, and that open-mindedness and being really open to the different opportunities that this field presents is what really allowed me to be successful, if we want to call it that, at this point in time. I was lucky with my first role really opening me up to a lot of what was out there. But after I was laid off, I never would have thought I would have ended up working at a Greek study abroad organization, and because I had no connection there, but it was one of the best experiences for me being able to be hands-on with the students and be able to learn so much about a new country and culture that I ended up falling in love with. You never know what opportunities might come your way. It's really important to be open to that. That would be one thing that I would say. If you look at my career path so far, I've definitely bopped around a little bit. I've worked at a couple different providers. I'm now at BU Study Abroad. That's a good thing. At first, it was something I was really self-conscious about, but it's really allowed me to see a lot of different work environments, be on different sides of the field, so to speak, and continue to be able to really define what my goals are and where I hope to be one day. International education has many different opportunities. It's important to be open to them. It's also important to recognize that things take time, and it's important to try different things and remember that if you're here working in this field, I assume you have a purpose and reason for doing so. Continue to stay motivated. And the other part of it is that there's so many opportunities to get involved. And when you are in your first few years and in the early stages of your career, that's the time to do it. Do it when you're motivated, you have the energy, get involved. those connections and that groundwork will pay off down the line. As we kind of talked about it, there's so many people I've crossed paths with that I've stayed connected with longer than I thought, that I've definitely had benefiting conversations from. And so take the time to be open, get involved, really focus on how you can build your own sense of community and cheerleaders that will help you along the way. Because sometimes there's bumps along the road, on the roadmap, and you'll need people to help support you with that.
If I'm doing my math correctly over here, Grace, I believe you are about to enter your eighth year in education abroad. I regret to inform you that you're now mid-career. And you mentioned this earlier, but one thing that's been on my mind a lot lately is how much new talent we have in international education at the moment. We lost a lot of people during the pandemic, but now we've also gained a lot of really good people who are new to our field. What do you make of the changing composition of our field?
Oh, man. As you said, it was sad when it was happening. That was when I was, we'll still consider in my early stages of the time. And so many of the people that I had worked with were either laid off or furloughed or things had happened. And it was a scary time for a lot of us in the field. Or also people decided, you know what, this is maybe too risky. I'm going to do a completely different career path as well. And people were shifting. It was definitely sad at times. There were a lot of people that I had really learned a lot from. But that's also the way workforces change. I'm so excited that the field is bouncing back. So important for us as people who have maybe been working in the field for a little bit to think about how we can have those conversations with them, help them grow, foster what their career goals are. So much, again, of our work is teamwork. We need to have people who are committed to this work and who are collaborative. And if we can be examples to that and make sure we're retaining that talent, that's something that really excites me, is all the new interest from the newcomers in the field.
Spoken like a true mid-career professional, my friend. One thing that does inspire me is that about the new voices that are in our field is that they're more inclusive, they're more diverse, they have different perspectives than perhaps was the case before the pandemic. So in my mind, that's a major silver lining as well. And in our field, though, it can be rather niche in some ways, as we know. And so we need to draw on the expertise of others, especially as we are building our knowledge and skills in the early stages of our careers. What are some steps for early career professionals to take that will allow them to lay a really strong foundation and grow from there?
A couple things come to mind, one of which, again, this idea of relationships and trying to build those relationships with others. What I love so much about our field is there are so many cool and interesting people doing such amazing things. And I look at certain individuals and they are such an expert. How will I get to that point one day and what they're doing? And it's a great opportunity to follow them on their platforms and attend their sessions, see this work that they're doing and ask those questions. That's something that would be really great to lay that foundation, is really being involved and eager to learn, because so much of the work that we're doing is something that is such a work in progress and that we're continuing to learn about ourselves. It's really important to ask those questions. But when also building those relationships, it's important to be open to new opportunities. And for me, when I was, and I still am, trying to figure out maybe some of the certain paths that I want to take, it was all about trying to have those conversations. Hopefully, maybe there's someone in your office, if you one day want to be in that role or position, ask them if they're willing to get coffee or lunch one day. I did that. It was a little intimidating at first, but it was great for me to be able to say, how did you get to where you are? What was your path like? And if this was something I was interested in one day, do you have any advice for what opportunities I should try to take advantage of, or what programs I should be interested in, or things that I should do, things like that. That's something where I would say that we have a lot of expertise in our field, and not being scared to ask those questions so that you can sort of build those connections down the road.
And I couldn't agree more with what you said. We are a field of connectors, and we tend to be generous with our time and expertise. And frankly, people like to be asked to share their knowledge. So I love you reached out to people and asked them to have lunch and asked them to pick their brains. Sometimes we can get caught up in the thought that we need to be an expert in something before we raise our hand to step into a leadership role. However, this kind of thinking can delay our ability to grow into our full potential. What advice do you have around this topic?
This is what I personally struggle with myself, but here I am as the conference chair of the bi-regional conference. When it comes to the question of what should we be thinking about when trying to raise our hand for a leadership role, we can get really hung up on I see we need more years of experience to be able to do this. So much of it when it comes to these leadership roles is being committed and wanting to be involved and being passionate about it and wanting to give back. That is the best key to success for someone who wants to be in a leadership role and getting involved. It's really about the commitment. It's definitely a lot of work. Don't get me wrong. There definitely are other leadership roles and opportunities that could be a good intro into this sort of work too. I felt like BASA was a good first step, looking into NASA. There's ways to navigate that depending on your own comfort levels, but it's not necessarily about certain expertise or hard skills. It's really about the passion and the commitment and wanting to be involved and wanting to help provide those opportunities to other people. I would say raise your hand. We need people to be committing to this work, and it's really well worth it and worth your time.
And I'll elevate another episode that we did with Cynthia Banks, who is one of the co-founders of the Global Leadership League that dropped back in October. The Global Leadership League, to Grace's point, offer a lot of low-cost and affordable options, many of which that are virtual for not only networking, but also there's leadership opportunities there as well. So plug for the Global Leadership League. Question of the day. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give yourself during your first year in international education?
Oh, man. Yeah, there are many things that I would tell my younger self. Because again, when you're in those early stages, you're so excited and you want things to work out. You want things to go how you think they're going to go. And I'm really a good example of how things didn't necessarily go how I thought they were going to go at the time. But that I wouldn't change anything. And so I would really tell myself that things take time. You can't start something new and expect that you're going to be an expert at it right away. Or you can't start something new and expect that everything's going to go smoothly. Where's the fun in that? You have to be challenged a little bit. You have to challenge yourself. And there's things too where maybe you are someone. I've never been much of a future thinker. In some ways, that's helped me stay very open-minded to things. Other ways, I'm kind of rolling with the punches here. But if you are someone where you're really clearly sought out what you want, mm-hmm. your career path to look like and define those goals, we talked a little bit about the master's yeah. program and that experience in the beginning. And that was something where I had thought I would have gotten it a lot earlier in my career, but I'm happy I didn't, that things work out how they're supposed to. I'm definitely a firm believer in the right opportunity will present itself when it's supposed to. If you're someone who's going through the job search and are getting discouraged, I won't lie, I've definitely cried about not getting jobs too. We're so frustrated and it's hard to not compare yourself to other people. We're in a field of people that are great and we should be celebrating that. But remember that things aren't personal. Things take time. And if you didn't get the opportunity then, the right one will come down the road. And usually then there's a reason for that. And at least there was something else that worked out because something didn't happen at that point in time.
It's incredibly well said. Thank you for that. What are some words of wisdom you would like to share with our listeners who might be struggling to see themselves as the future leaders of this field or don't quite know how to get started?
Just have one for me because it's something I know I'm still working on, that this will maybe not be words of wisdom, maybe words of affirmation here. But as I was saying, it does take time to figure out what you want to be involved in, and that's okay. There is sometimes also this pressure to be doing everything all at once. And you do want to be thoughtful about it. You want to be mindful of your own time, your boundaries and your goals and what you want to put into it. Allow yourself some grace and time for that. But I know for me personally, I've always been overwhelmed when thinking about how to become a leader in this field just because everyone seems so knowledgeable and experienced already, but that comes with experience. So as you're going along your career journey, know that a lot of the work that we do comes from the dedication and passion that we put into it. Remember that you are where you need to be right now, and having those conversations to learn more about where you see yourself in 5, 10, 15 years that you can work on in the meantime.
What are some other ways, Grace, that young professionals can develop their leadership skills?
Something I've been thinking a lot about. I know you've been very gracious in telling me how you think I'm very involved in everything. And I am trying to set some boundaries for myself and figure out how to spend some time doing other things as much as I love the work that we're doing. You don't have to jump into the most formal of opportunities right away. There's so many resources and opportunities that this field has to offer. And that's a lot of what I love about the work that we do too. There's so many of the professional associations that give panels sometimes, and there's other online certification courses that you can do. Maybe you don't know if you want to pursue a higher degree yet, and you can dabble in doing some certificates or things. And there's a lot of other opportunities and resources and expertise that we can draw from that doesn't involve volunteering. If that's something that you're not ready for yet, definitely also tapping into your own office networks, your own community networks, they have opportunities to share, and that there's so many opportunities to learn, whether it's through webinars or podcast opportunities. That's where it's like, who would have thought that this would have been something that's coming down the line? It's really making sure you're staying connected and being aware of what's out there and deciding for yourself if that's something that you think will benefit your specific career goals down the line or not.
What advice do you have for folks listening who might be supervisors or mentors to early career professionals? How can leaders best support the newer professionals to our field?
Again, such an important one with so much new talent coming in. And so I'll answer it from both angles, even though you asked me about the supervisor one too. For supervisors, it does seem there's always so much going on. I'm a firm believer, and I really think it's important to try to retain your employees and learn what their interests are and help them grow. If that's something that's possible on your team or at your organization, it's really worthwhile to have those conversations and help people understand maybe what directions they want to go in. Speaking for myself as someone who is still trying to maybe figure out what path I want to go in, it would be helpful. I am very lucky where I'm in a workplace where, because we're sort of a larger office and there's a lot of people doing different things, I am able to have those conversations to try to learn about other areas of the field and what people are doing. But if you're in one of those leadership roles, it's just important to maybe initiate those conversations and give the space to do so and learn what would be helpful and the most supportive for people to continue to do the work that they're doing, and hopefully having them want to stay and continue doing that work on your team too.
Let me flip that question around a little bit. What advice would you have for our listeners who are newer to this field about advocating to their supervisors about the importance of professional development opportunities such as NAFTA?
Yeah, that's a good one. And it's definitely something I really believe in. Again, I wouldn't be involved in many of these professional organizations if I didn't believe and benefit from the programming that they did. So when it comes to advocating for these opportunities, I really wouldn't be scared to have that conversation. Of course, it will help if you can align why you think it's important to either go to a conference or go to a workshop or participate in this virtual online course and why that might benefit your work. We can't expect things. We want to make a case for it. The more you can present as to why you believe in it so much, why you're so passionate about it, why you think this will help you so much with your work, it'll be a tough thing to say no to. Of course, we all come from different organizations that might have different budgets and things, but asking will go such a long way, because then that also shows that you are engaged, you are interested. If maybe something can't work out that time, when there's another opportunity that comes along, your team is able to send someone to a conference, they'll hopefully think of you because you asked. That's where I really think it's important to ask for these sort of opportunities to help you in your work. It's something that hopefully will then benefit the team as a whole. It's something that you can then bring back, but you have to have the conversations and you have to ask. Otherwise, it might not happen. It's important to try to be involved in these offerings because it really helps build that sense of community and will also help you professionally.
The first step is always to ask. I could not agree more. I love what you said about articulating the value of attending a conference such as NAFSA for not only oneself, but for the team at large, for an office, and for the students that we work with. Can you talk a little bit more about that, how we can articulate the value of these types of opportunities for those that are larger than just us?
It's funny because I'm kind of going through it right now with a different conference that we've normally never attended. Very concretely, if you're trying to articulate why this would be a benefit, usually with a lot of these conferences or whatever you might be looking at, there are online programs. And so you can really go online, see the types of sessions that are being offered, the types of other opportunities, whether they're networking opportunities or if there are particular events that might be happening around the conference. If you know that some of your partners are going to be there and you can have important conversations, you can get very tangible with it. And that's something where we were getting a lot of those types of questions so that people could make a decision as to whether or not this was something that was worth their time and money and effort. Really looking at and aligning. Maybe, I know I struggle with this. I want to go to everything and I want to learn about everything, but I need to take a step back and say, well, this is my role. What will help me succeed more in my role? And also then really aligning those points too with the certain opportunities that you're looking at. It's always good to keep things in mind. As you continue to grow, your needs will change. There will be times where then maybe a different opportunity might make sense or not. I do think it's really important to build that case, and there's definitely ways to do so.
many of us in international education find this to be a field where we are called to stay and grow for the long haul. What excites you when you think about the future ahead for yourself, your colleagues, and for our field at large?
I definitely hope I am here for the long haul. I'm not saying I'm happy the pandemic happened, but it was very interesting to see such a pivotal shift in our field at the point that I was at in my career. It was where I was able to see a lot of change very quickly. And so that idea and a lot of the changes that came out of that, it's really important. We need to give ourselves a little bit of a break here. We are starting to maybe finally feel like we can go back to some of the more creative conversations we were having and doing other things besides reacting to the work that we were doing. It makes me hopeful and I'm excited to continue to see what changes there might be, what innovations there might be in the field, because a lot of those conversations that have started happening, that's what really excites me, is being able to be open to those changes that comes in a lot of different ways. We've talked about the changes in the sort of demographics of our field, the changes in the programming that we might need to be doing, the changing needs of our students. There's a lot going on right now that it's exciting to see how we're going to continue to address some of that. And the nice thing is, at least, I don't know how you feel, Zach, having been on the road, but the interest in study abroad is back and it's booming. Keeping that in mind, too, of we're now back at this place where people are interested and willing to do this again. Can we encourage them to do different things or other types of programming? There's a lot of exciting questions to come. And I know I'm relying on a lot of people like you and others in their mid-career and leadership roles to help lead the way in that.
And lastly, I have one more question for you, my friend, as we begin to wrap up here. As you contemplate education abroad in 2024, what makes you hopeful?
I really did miss opportunities to connect in the community during the last few years. And it's been great being able to go back to these conferences and being able to be back on the road and connecting with people. I'm hopeful that energy is back. Again, it's taken some time and we should all have given ourselves a little bit of grace with that. But I'm hopeful that we're now back in a place where we can continue to really think about the direction we want to see this field going in. That's something that makes me hopeful as we're building ourselves back up. And I really think that there's more opportunities than ever before. I'm excited to continue to connect with longtime friends, new friends, hopefully, that are coming into the field. And that sense of community and the fact that is really back and stronger than ever is what makes me hopeful.
Grace Tuardi giving us all the best advice to give ourselves grace. I can't imagine a better place to end things than right here. Grace Tuardi, thank you so much for being here. What a terrific conversation.
Thank you so much, Zach. This was really fun. Thank you so much for thinking of me to be on the podcast. And I really appreciate all you're doing organizing these opportunities for everyone.
My pleasure. Thank you. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of Changing Lives Through Education Abroad. I'm your host, Zach McInnes, and please make sure to join us next week as we continue to explore topics around international education and exchange. Thank you to my spectacular World Strides colleagues, Lindsay Kelchner and Sarah Kachuba, without whom this podcast would not be possible. Please subscribe to Changing Lives Through Education Abroad on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And share with your friends and colleagues. Let's create life-changing moments together.